From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Now, given that our show is focused on hard news and politics, we rarely interview fiction authors. But today, we turn to a writer whose debut novel has earned such high acclaim for addressing critical issues of race and class that we felt compelled to bring on Stephanie Jimenez, author of They Could Have Named Her Anything. Cosmopolitan magazine says, quote, penned by a Latinx author, this arrestingly titled debut is told from the perspective of two girls and their fathers. Racism, class, betrayal, family, and friendship are all dissected by this fresh new voice. Stephanie Jimenez is based in Queens, New York. Her fiction and nonfiction have appeared in The Guardian, O, The Oprah Magazine, Joyland Magazine, The New York Times, and more. She's a former Fulbright recipient and a graduate of Scripps College in Claremont, California. Welcome to the program, Stephanie.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
So I should say that I know you through the PR work that you have done for Rewire.news, and we've only ever emailed back and forth to set up interviews about reproductive justice issues. Here you are embarking on your own as a novelist. Tell me about this book, which, as I said, has received huge acclaim, which is a no mean feat for somebody who's written their first book. What is this about?
Thank you. Yeah, and I would say that my background working at Rewire.news actually is really relevant to the book itself and what the book is about. So the book is about a Latinx teenager from Queens, New York, from an immigrant neighborhood in Queens, who is accepted at an elite private school on the Upper East Side. And it tells the story of her struggle to fit into the school and also what's happening in her family life as her father is going through a financial crisis because he's just lost his job. And so the book is told from the perspective of Maria, who is a 17-year-old protagonist, and also from the perspective of her father and the perspective of Maria's best friend and her father as well.
So the book, I understand, is aimed at young adults?
Yes. So it's actually a genre that's called crossover. So it appeals to both adults and young readers. And I've heard it described in many different ways. I've heard it called new adult. I've heard it called crossover. I've heard something called millennial fiction. So I think there's lots of different ways to describe the book. But one thing that, you know, I keep in mind a lot is that writers don't really write their work thinking too much about the market and who's going to read it. I think we write it hoping that it will reach anyone. And so I hope that my book is just as appealing to young readers as adults.
So the book's main protagonist, this girl named Maria, a young Latinx woman, a scholarship student, who writes from Queens to attend this fancy school, Bell Seminary. How much of that is based on your own life? You're also from Queens, New York. You're a young Latinx woman. Is this partly based on your sort of life story?
Yeah, so I draw a lot on some of my own experiences. Encountering whiteness in particular in predominantly white spaces. So a lot of what Maria goes through in terms of, interacting with classmates who don't understand where she's from or don't understand her identity or make assumptions about who she is, that is definitely drawn on from my own experience encountering many of the same things, both in high school and in college. I know a lot of the struggles that people of color and people from immigrant backgrounds face in these private institutions is that there's a sense of not really knowing what everyone else knows, right? So there's a lack of cultural capital. So that could be like not knowing that you're supposed to go to your professor during office hours, or not knowing that you're supposed to be loud and confident in class, especially if you've grown up being taught that you're supposed to be deferential to people in power or to your elders. So some of those things that Maria is encountering, feeling really left out, feeling like she doesn't really understand what's going on, and also feeling like she's at a serious disadvantage to her peers, is something that I drew from my own life.
Now, it's not often enough that stories told from perspectives like yours make it into mainstream fiction, into the world of mainstream fiction, right? Unfortunately, the world of mainstream fiction mirrors the world of private educational institutions. They tend to be white dominated. They tend to focus on privileged voices. Do you feel that it's changing a little bit?
Absolutely. I think that there are many more people of color who are getting their foot in the door and getting their stories told. But I think, you know, it's never enough. Like, even despite the progress that we've made, you know, I've told this one story about what Latina girlhood can look like, but it's not the definitive story at all. We need everyone's stories to be published. And unfortunately, you're right, the publishing industry remains very white. It is very difficult to get your narrative published. And as a person of color, a lot of what you'll encounter is being told, well, you know, this seems familiar, or we think that this narrative maybe has already been told. And so you're tokenized again in the same way that you're tokenized in you know, the private schools and the private institutions where diversity is touted, but really only to a certain extent.
And only to the extent that it makes the institutions look good, right?
Right.
So I'm wondering if you can read a section from your novel, They Could Have Named Her Anything, so our audience can get a taste of this work.
Sure. So I'm going to read a passage where Maria, the protagonist, is talking to her father about wanting to go to college. And her father, who is experiencing this financial crisis, thinks that Maria should actually stay home and not go to college immediately after high school, but get a job and help the family. Maria was 17, and her father thought she needed to work to help out in the house. She said she would apply to Taco Bell, but it made him uncomfortable to think of her dressed in those two button polos, staying well past midnight at the 24-hour drive-through. He'd rather she go straight to college. When Maria was accepted to Bell Seminary, the private all-girls Catholic school, he thought that he'd been blessed. He didn't want her behind a cashier counter now, taking orders from boys who had barely just gotten their license, boys who would invite her to get into their cars, boys who in other contexts, as military recruits, for example, or in court proceedings, were not boys at all, but men. Maria didn't want a job either, no matter how much Miguel tried to convince her that it was a good idea. "We'll only take half the money," he told her. "You can keep the rest." She pushed her plate of food away from her, still piled with rice and Vienna sausages. "I don't care about money," she said. "I'd rather go to college." "You'll go to college eventually, but for now you can get experience this way. Won't that school help you find a job in an office where you can start building your career?" Maria puffed her face out, her cheeks big like water balloons. "The only thing I can get in an office is an internship, Dad, and those don't pay." Finally, Miguel lost his temper. "My house," he thundered, "my rules." But now, Miguel felt a tinge of remorse. Before he'd lost his job, they had just finished paying off two rows of Maria's braces. His daughter's life was still full of promise and possibility. She deserved to study and become whatever she wanted. It made his heart sink that right now he was asking her to act like an adult and put her dreams on hold.
Stephanie Jimenez is my guest, reading from her debut novel, They Could Have Named Her Anything. What I love about the passage you just read was that you don't just tell it from the perspective of Maria, the protagonist, the 17-year-old girl, you know, it would be easy to cast her as the sympathetic figure and her father as the unsympathetic figure, the, you know, the person who's cracking the whip on wanting his daughter to take a job, but you share his perspective. perspective as well. As a father who's a person of color of a young girl in a very, very difficult economy, why was that important for you, that father-daughter relationship, focusing also on the father?
Well, I wanted to show that it's a real struggle. And that despite the fact that Maria is in a unique position where she is first generation to go to college, and her father doesn't understand that experience, he does understand the need for her to go off and to make her way in the world. And I think it was important specifically to tell his side of the story because, one, a 17-year-old's perspective is very limited. So Maria can't fully understand what's going on in her home. So her father needs to be there to really demonstrate what the family is experiencing and the hardship that they're experiencing. But I also, it was important for me to show that he was a flawed character. And much of the book centers this tension around Maria's girlhood and some of the toxic masculinity that surrounds her. And some of that comes directly from her home, and her father. And so, there was, I think, to avoid making him a villain and to avoid making him, sort of this like chauvinistic man, who's teaching her the wrong things, I did want to inhabit his perspective from time to time to show his humanity and to show the real things that he was going through and the reasons why he thought certain things.
Now, I understand that another aspect of your book also focuses on girls, especially teenage girls' sexuality. And this is a topic that becomes important when we frame it within today's conversations around sex and sexual assault and women being empowered to speak out and women demanding justice in that realm that is rarely talked about or that, society often feels too uncomfortable talking about. Can you share with us, in a manner that is appropriate for television and radio, her journey, the journey of this young woman who you write about, in understanding her rights within a sexual relationship?
Yes, and that is a pivotal part of the book, is centering this idea of girlhood and what sexuality looks like for girls. As you know, Sonali, I come from a background in reproductive justice, and so sexual education is something that I think about a lot. And Maria, who goes to this private Catholic school, what she's being taught is so at odds with reproductive justice and sexual justice, because she's being taught, this kind of this brand of empowerment for girls that's totally based not in actual feminism and injustice, but is based in decorum. She's being told that she can achieve what she wants and excel, but she's not actually practically being taught the sexual education that she needs. And so what ends up happening is that she's receiving sexual education from all kinds of different sources that, are inaccurate. So whether that be her friends who are reading issues of Cosmopolitan and are just spreading rumors, or from, the chauvinistic men in her life, who are telling her things that are in, I think, their good intention. They're telling her to protect herself and they're telling her not to go out at a certain hour, which is well intentioned, but it's not what she needs, right? To become a person with full agency, and to become a woman that is independent and fully herself. And so this tension between what we want girls to be, and what we actually give them, the resources they have access to in order to become that, is really prevalent in my book. And Maria doesn't have, the kind of education in navigating healthy relationships, or in navigating the, what she needs to have safe sex, for example, or to learn about consent. She has none of that. And despite the fact that she is at this elite school that touts itself in it for its, elite education, the education is still missing that critical piece.
The book is about two girls, although Maria is the main character. Her friend in this private school is a critical part of the story because it's that interaction between the two that helps tell Maria's story. Tell us about her friend, the character of her friend.
Yes, so her friend is one of the wealthiest girls in the grade. She is white. She lives in this massive apartment on the Upper East Side, and she has multiple homes, summer homes. And Maria becomes friends with her because she senses that they're both outsiders at this school that is like very prim and proper and focused on decorum. Her friend Rocky is neglected by her parents for the most part, and is also forging her own way through her girlhood, and trying to find answers when there really seems like there's no mentors or people to guide her. So Maria and Rocky are attracted to each other in this way, and they form this friendship where they become really, close really quickly. And part of that is due to this eagerness to understand where each other comes from, right? So to Rocky, Maria is this total outsider who is Latina and from a different socioeconomic class. And so Rocky wants to know all about her. She's so curious about her. And for Maria, it's the same. It's almost the same compulsion. She's like, well, you have all this money and you live this lavish life. What is that like? And so they enter this friendship with, the best intentions to get to know each other. And what ends up happening is that it becomes much more complex than just looking around at each other's lives and immediately understanding. It becomes really harmful in some ways. And I think it was important for me to display that kind of friendship, because too often when we think about friendships between interracial groups, we often have this narrative of healing, right? Like we have like someone of this race and someone of another race, and they get together
Building
and so,
bridges, that's the
all
term.
right, building bridges, suddenly like everything has been forgiven. And now, we live in this perfect, harmonious world. And this book is not that. This book really looks deeply at the struggles that people have in understanding one another. And I wanted specifically to look at that for teenagers, because I don't think there's a time when people are as open as they are at that age. And so the kind of vulnerability that they allow each other allows for this friendship to become, I think, more realistic and more impactful.
Let's talk about the title of the book. They could have named her anything. Maria's name itself is a talking point in the book, because of course you can pronounce Maria in two different ways depending upon which world you inhabit. Can you explore that a little?
Yes, absolutely. So Maria is ashamed of her name, essentially, when she goes to this private school. And she has this thought process of why was I given such a stereotypical name, right? Like when you think of a Latina, like the first name that you might guess is Maria. And so she has this sort of, she wrestles with this, with constantly being seen as a stereotype and constantly being conscious of the way that the white gaze is interpreting her presence. And so throughout the book, it's something that she is constantly revisiting, and trying to find that comfort between who she is and who others are telling her she is, or projecting this image onto her that she knows isn't actually aligned with who she is. And by the end of the book, she does have this acceptance of who she is and what her name is, and has all this pride that she discovers at the end. But you'd have to read it to see the full arc of how that happens.
You open your book, or before you open your book, you have a quote from Sandra Cisneros, her book, The House on Mango Street, which is one of my favorite books. All you wanted, Sally, was to love and to love and to love and to love, and no one could call that crazy. Why did you put that in there?
So this book is not a love story, but it is a story about the need to contain oneself, or feeling the need to contain oneself as a person of color at odds in a society that values whiteness.
Right, to hide your accent, hide your otherness. I can
Yes.
relate.
Yeah, absolutely. And so this quote, having Sally just being able to love and to love and to love and to love and in excess, in real excess, and being able to do that without someone judging her, that's the same desire that Maria has, like to be fully herself and to not, you know, have to always think about, oh, if I wear this, will I look too much like a Latina? Or if I speak like this, what will they think of me? Or can I bring my full self to this space right now? And so I thought that that quote was just such a perfect way to encapsulate what the book was about, because I think for Maria and for so many people of color, there's this constant struggle of when can I actually freely be me?
And I'm assuming an author like Sandra Cisneros is a role model for you, someone whose work you might feel has enabled yours?
Of course. I mean, she is one of the pioneers in having, you know, Chicana and Latina literature be taken seriously and be canonized. And that's a constant struggle. That's something that I think as writers of color, we're all working toward. But that's why we write, because we think, especially as women of color, that our lives are worth documenting and our experiences are worth being read and being told.
So finally, just as Maria worries about being her full self and struggles with this idea of being typecast and having a name that's too Latino sounding, how do you, how have you navigated the world of publishing and this sense that the book you have written might be typecast in that same way? Oh, this is a book for young Latinx teens, or this is, you know, this is one of those books that falls into this category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a great question, because it was something that I thought about a lot, and that, you know, it determines so many things. So it determines, for example, the cover, right? The cover is this big, bright magenta pink. And typically, if you have a pink cover of your book, that means that it's geared toward women. And I think that the way that I started thinking of my book and how deeply I wanted it to be universal, right, and appeal to everyone. And then as I started to think more, it was like, I think I came to terms with this idea that, you know, if marketing it a certain way, if putting a pink cover on the book actually helps it get into the hands of readers who will actually love this story and who will appreciate the story and who will see themselves in the story, then I'm okay with that. And I think that that's how I've started to shift my mindset about it being, you know, put into any sort of category. If it being put into any sort of category makes it so that those readers have access to it, then I think that's a great thing.
Stephanie, you are very young. This is your debut novel. Are you brewing ideas for a second novel?
Yes, I will write a second novel, but I don't know exactly what that will be yet, but I'm working on it.
Give out a website where people can find out more about you, your book. You know, if you're going to be going on book tour anywhere, doing any readings.
Yes, so you can find me at StephanieJimenezWriter.com or at Steph Says on Twitter and Instagram. And I will be doing book events. So my next one is in Kingston, New York. And then later in October, I will be in San Francisco and also in Los Angeles. And then I will be in Austin, Texas at the Texas Book Festival. So that's all coming up in October.
Well, good luck to you. I hope to have you on in the future about your next book. Thanks so much, Stephanie.
Thank you so much.
Stephanie Jimenez is based in Queens, New York. Her fiction and nonfiction have appeared in The Guardian, O, The Oprah Magazine, Joyland Magazine, The New York Times, and more. She's a former Fulbright recipient and a graduate of Scripps College in Claremont, California. We've been discussing her debut novel, They Could Have Named Her Anything. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.